Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Welcome to Mo's Tropical Summer. As any regular listener knows, every summer I get to talk with people from all over the world, actually, who work or own bars with a bit of a tropical bent to them, and this summer is no exception. So sit back and relax, mix yourself a drink that has lots of fruit juices, rums, and maybe even an umbrella, and enjoy tropical summer. This podcast, I got to sit down and talk to a very ambitious, very amusing, very talented bartender, Adam Demarath. Adam has been, for the last year and a half or so, traveling around the country with his wife, drinking almost exclusively at tiki bars. Oh, the liver and the diabetes. I don't know how he's as trim and healthy as he is, so obviously they know how to balance all of that. But more importantly, Adam is a bartender at Brooklyn's fabulous, insanely beautiful and delicious Sunken Harbor Club. I highly recommend visiting that if you're ever in the area. It is so worth your time. One of the few ways that New York has actually been able to launch something kind of tiki that I think people like. It's because it's not totally tiki, just kind of tiki. Anyway, we're going to get into that and his road trip and what they listened to on that road trip and all kinds of other stuff. So let's hunker down and take a listen.
And I always have
start
people.
With
I was going to say.
Go right in.
Totally how it's going to be. I'm going to start. You're going to start.
I'm going to start. Coughing. Yeah. We're going to have contagious coughing.
And could you imagine, though, if we were at Tiki Tiki right now and we were both coughing at each other, everyone in that bar would be like, get the fuck out of here.
They'd be, like, they'd be wearing their garlic around their neck. You know,
totally. If we have cooties, get everybody out. Yes. But yeah, so I always like to start these. Introduce yourself. Tell people like who you are, where you work, that, you know, pertinent information.
Yeah. Well, my name is Adam Demrath. I've been a bartender for the last about 9 years. I've been in hospitality for 20. I didn't get behind a bar until I moved to New York 12 years ago. And I did lots of different jobs, but as an actor, trying to be an actor, which is why my wife and I moved out there, you know, just like the proverbial, like, I need to just go back into restaurants because the flexibility. And I was just like, I can't wait tables anymore. I need to make more money. And, I need the flexibility, and I wanted to do something that seemed like it had more of a craft element to it because I'm a creative person. So, I fibbed on my resume. I got behind a bar. They were happy to take me in. They were really nice. They knew I was new, that I was very, very green. It was a wine bar, but they had decent cocktails. And, I learned all about the craft of cocktails. Like I dove in. I got my feet wet there, but the little bit that I learned just got me hooked right away. And I've worked in a handful of really nice spots and been head bartender at a few spots. And now I work in, I can call it home because it feels like the place I should have been all these years, which is Sunken Harbor Club in Brooklyn. And it's really a premier bar, not
it
just
really tiki, is it's not just gorgeous. Tiki,
but it's a sensational bar with a killer team. One thing I like to tell people is that everybody on staff there, everyone we've had since day one, since opening, has been a head bartender at another program somewhere. I've never worked in a bar where that's, you know, a lot of times like at Pegu Club, everybody that worked there went off and opened their own bars,
right,
after the fact. But this kind of like pulled a bunch of rock stars in to be on the team. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Sunken Harbor Club is one of the most beautiful spots I've been to in New York. And you've discussed this in other ways, but New York, like, and it, I think it's good. It's not like it's tiki, but it's not full tiki. New York is so weird about their tiki. Like they just can't support it.
They have a hard time with it.
Yeah.
They have a hard time with it for a variety of reasons, not just the cultural stuff, but I think it took a while for people to just take it seriously, even as a drink, a cocktail genre. But I think now bars are wise to have a pebble ice machine, you know, in house, and set up their bars with the option to have, you know, consumable pebble ice, and every once in a while throw a tiki style drink on the menu because it's a very popular cocktail style.
Yeah. And it's like Mai Tais and swizzles.
Yeah.
You know, I see those all over the place.
You don't have to go to a tiki bar in New York to get a good tiki cocktail, because New York is a premier destination city, like globally. I mean, we're, I think, you know, top tier, and you can go find awesome bartenders all over the city that'll make you really great tiki cocktails. But the actual tiki bar experience is very elusive in New York. And as we said, for a number of reasons, but I think Sunken Harbor has done it right, where we've meshed the what we love about tiki and some sort of escapism. Like, there are no windows in the space. Haven't really seen that before in attempts like with tiki, and some sense of immersion, like you're kind of in a new world in this ship, in the hull of the ship. And, but that's also combined with sort of old world, like Golden Era and Prohibition Era cocktails, to sort of marry with the concept downstairs, because we're above Gage and Tolner, which is this historic place, and a steakhouse and chop house. So having those two things, I think, in the same program is very smart, and it does pull in people from sort of all ends of the spectrum, I think.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. And now you're from California originally?
Originally, yeah. I was born in Torrance. When I was five, my family moved from Long Beach to Riverside, and that's where I grew up.
SoCal kid like myself. And I think, and of course, but you've lived in New York for a long time, and I've spent a lot of time in New York, as you know, having family there. What I see is, just for whatever reason, New York can't do the whimsy. Or some, you know, it's like, it has to stay sophisticated. If it starts getting a little whimsical, unless it's like kind of a ridiculous place to begin with that they can go in and not take seriously. And no, oh, I'm just coming in here for whatever crap slushy and this, you know, then
they know that's what they're getting.
Yeah.
But when there's buzz built around it, mm-hmm. and people have something nice to say about a place, there is an elevated expectation, yes. that it has to be New York sleek and
exactly. There has to be the sophistication.
Comes with a certain package, a certain expectation, mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. expect to have in New York. And I think you're absolutely right. I think it's just, I've heard people say it's just because New York is too too snobby for.
Yeah. TV. Yeah, totally.
And that is part of it. It's again, not just the cultural stuff. And that's yeah. a whole separate topic, which is valid in New York. It's a very global, very mm-hmm. Culturally diverse city.
Yeah.
But I think the sophistication that people expect to have in a good cocktail experience in New York, mm-hmm. he still has a hard time in New York.
Yeah. Sort of being it's so that. Curious, but you're absolutely right in that people know the drinks and I mean, you'll see.
Them.
Yeah. And love them. You'll see on, Robert Simonson did that, the 50 drinks to have in New York. And yeah. I know there are tropical drinks on that list, you yes. know, absolutely yeah. tropical drinks.
Weird, silly ones too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you got to know where to go and everything. So yeah. it's fascinating, but Sunken Harbor does it really well. And you do not lie. Every single person that works there is at the top of their game. And it's incredible. I just love it. Love it. Love it. So lucky for yeah. you to be part of that crew. I mean,
yeah, it's a pleasure. It's really a pleasure. And that's Garrett's doing, I got back from my tour last summer.
Yeah.
Right as they were about to hire, and Jimmy, one of our other bartenders, who was
Jimmy, I love
partner in crime at the Exotica mm-hmm. series that I was decorating for them at near the end. He had reached out to me during lockdown about if I was looking for work and because they were looking for somebody mm-hmm. to hire at a couple spots where he had kind of bounced around to. But I was still away, way up in Maine. My wife and I just got the hell out of New York yeah. during all that. We were away for 10 months. So once I came back and I was finally able to go back to work, after the tour, I then reached out to Jimmy and said, hey, I'm ready now. What do you got? Where are you now? And he said, dude, you got to reach out to Garrett because he's opening a tiki bar. I'm like, wait a minute. I know Second Harbor Club is also about to open.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard about a second tiki bar. Is Garrett going to be working at the Sunken Harbor Club? And of course, sure enough. And he said, yeah, I think that would actually be a really good fit if you came on board. So it was just very fortuitous, the timing that they Amazing. Needed right when I came back and that I was ready to get back into the workforce full time.
Yeah. And not only that, but you've just been traveling the country, trying every drink known to man, which yeah. I'm sure is both every tiki drink that in the United States, potentially, I'm sure is both inspiring and not at the same time.
Some things cancel themselves out.
Yeah, for sure. But I would think too, you also got to see all these spaces, and I mean, what a great education that is.
That was the more fun part of it, I think, was just seeing it, the sort of panoramic view of where tiki is right now, because it just from 2020, even though everything closed at that time, mm-hmm. there were probably in the last 2 years almost 2 dozen new tiki spots. It's insane
mm-hmm.
how quickly it's
just in California.
Just in California, you go up to the Bay Area and there's they've got another half dozen new spots since we left our tour.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Maybe we should roll back. And one question I want to ask you, I'm going to roll back a little bit more, is sure. you said you had head bartended at a couple places. So you started at a wine bar. When did you wind up? What was the kind of place you were at when you wound up working your way up to that head bartender status?
Well, I was just needing a job and I found work at a restaurant called mm-hmm. Upland, as in Upland, California. It's like, well, this feels right. And that's because the executive chef there was from Upland. He was trained in Italian cuisine, but it's all, had kind of a fusion global approach. The food was great. The cocktails were fine, but I just started out and took whatever shifts I could get. And I'd say less than 10 months in, they wanted to move away from a consultant who was Tom Richter. I'll give him a little shout out. he was doing our drinks. He's a good friend of mine, and he's phenomenal, and I've learned a lot from him. But they just wanted to try to keep the drinks in house from within the staff, and nobody was pitching ideas. Nobody gave management anything really to consider except myself. And I gave him like six drinks, and the menu was only like 10, 11 drinks long. It was very small. But they took like half of them. They took five of the six that I gave them. And so I had half the menu. And so they liked them enough that they, So from that point on, I just began designing the menus, and wheedled it down. And, you know, I, without the actual titleship, basically assumed head bartender responsibilities, and everybody behind the bar started to kind of look to me for that. And eventually it wound up in my salary, and I got the title and all that. And I was there for over four years. And that's where I was when I met Garrett and Jimmy and started doing Exotica stuff.
I didn't realize you were part of the Exotica crew.
I wasn't behind the bar with them. There was discussion that that would happen moving forward. Like that, you know, I came to a couple R&D sessions to taste the cocktails and, you know, pitch my thoughts in their development. But that probably would have happened down the road, but I was really just coming in to decorate and design and overhaul the space. Because I used to have these huge elaborate home tiki parties in my one bedroom apartment in Astoria.
Oh my God.
With up to 80 attendees. And the last time we did it, I hired a photographer and videographer to like capture footage, and I spliced together a little like promo thing, and Garrett and Jimmy got hold of that. And they're like, okay, you're giving the rum room a run for its money. We're going to have to, you got to come and decorate. That's the one thing that's missing now in Exotica is having the immersive experience. So, and I had all the decor that I would transform my space with in a storage facility down the street from me. So
they hired
me services, and I did a few of them for them. It was great.
So you worked your way into Tiki by decorating, not by the drinks, even though you already had them.
I learned the drinks being behind the bar. I think I've actually that very first bar gig was the wine bar on Upper East Side. And I think I had started picking up cocktail books already. I learned to love tiki drinks through a decidedly non-tiki drink, which is the painkiller. And because the first time I made that drink was through Dale DeGroff's recipe. And I was just taken by the whole story of the Soggy Dollar bar in Virgin Islands. And I made the drink, and then we went on a cruise to the Bahamas, and I was like ordering it, you know, because I'm like, I'm in the Caribbean, I'm going to order painkillers. and from there, I was like, oh, Jeff Berry, who's that? And I started picking up Jeff's books and reading all those. And it just like, it became, you know, I think everybody in bartending moves through phases of likes and interests. And I did the same. Like I was a gin guy. I think when I moved to New York, I learned to love whiskey because that was really in vogue. It still is, but it was really hot. Bourbon was really like on the rise at that time. And I fell in love with that and a lot of the classic cocktails that went with it. And then, and eventually scotch, but I was like, that's gotta be the last stop. There can't be like, because this is too hard to like, you know, it's so crazy. You have to develop a palate for something like scotch. But then I found rum and rum cocktails, and that's where I've stayed for years because it's so wide and varied. Your education on like, it's like wine. It's very intimidating.
It's non-ending. Yeah, it does not end. I think gin kind of goes in that realm too. There's a lot of gins out there, but rum for sure.
Yeah,
stylistically, but rums, it's like it's far, far, far too intimidating. And I've been to so many rum tastings and so many tropical and tiki bars and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And at some point I just have to be like, okay, just pick the ones that you know you love. This will be your staple at home. And you're
right. Yeah.
So every once in a while, something new will will work its way into my home collection, but I'm just cool. Like, I'm willing to try everything. I will not remember it all. I just can't remember it all.
You know what you know.
Yeah. But I also am not mixing my own cocktails for others because you know the glory of a perfect split base. You know, if you can get that right combo, I think, that blend. I think I heard an interview with Jeff Berry, the legendary Jeff Berry, who I just saw a week ago. In fact, I was in his town when I caught this illness.
I know.
But I remember listening to him talk about how the hardest drink for him to perfect on his menu was the daiquiri, just because he was looking for the right rum blend for his daiquiri. Yeah. And I'm just like, I just can't. But his daiquiris are incredible. In my brain, I'm like, oh my God, that just hurts my brain too much to do this much science to get just that right thing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that. Now you add all these other things to your drinks. You know, you're
of course. Now you got now do the same, you know, blending with your citrus, with your sweet.
Totally. Do you have banana in your drink? Okay. Right. What kind of rums are going to work with banana and not Yeah. There's so much science in there. It's funny bringing up Garrett in that, you know, he worked at Existing Conditions. And I remember that was the perfect bar for you because you were such a scientist. Yes. Everything that Garrett Richard does as a bartender is like, I've got saline this, and then I did a tincture of that, and then I acid adjusted this, and I'm
A little malic and citric acid.
I'm like, it's nothing easy. It's nothing easy with you. You know, do you ever just pour stuff into a tin and just dump it? Have you ever done that in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen him do it, but it's not like his whole MO is to.
It's not his nature. Yeah.
How to advance it and make something more interesting.
And thank God for that, because he has the patience I do not have, and I'm more than happy to sit there and drink his delicious, delicious drinks.
Yeah. Well, and that's why a lot of people admire him too, because he's taking, like, he has the temperament. And like you said, the patience and the foresight to understand, like, well, if that's what everybody else is doing, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I there's gotta be a way to, like, you know, turn a corner here or find like an off the beaten path approach to that is more interesting. Because then it makes it stand out a little bit more. And in this business where you have so many options, that's what you want to do. You kind of want to be thinking about that and evolving your experience as a bar.
Yeah. What are the kind of cocktails that you enjoy making, since you've run the gamut as well? I mean, I don't think not everyone is going to be as extreme as Garrett, but also not everyone's going to be as lazy as myself.
Right. I used to be very ambitious at home, but I've got to say, I haven't been drinking a lot lately. Which, you know, I'm going to Oasis this week, and I'm probably going to need to build up my tolerance very quickly there.
Yep. but that's how I felt going into Tales. I was just like, I have not been drinking that much, and I'm going to New Orleans. Oh Lord.
I'm going to wreck myself.
Yep.
But I think just whatever reason, I'm working a lot now, and, you know, bartending shifts are long. You're on your feet a lot. I'm there 4 nights a week. I'm off Sunday through Tuesday. So those aren't like the pinnacle of drinking days.
Yeah. You know? Right.
So I'm not really making myself a lot of drinks at home, but when I am in the mood for something, I tend to just pour, I've got like 200 bottles of rum at home. So I just will pull something and pour neat of, you know, rum that I really enjoy or I'll make something that's stirred quickly that I can build in a glass that I don't have to dirty a bunch of stuff because, you know, dishes pile up in New York when you don't have dishwashers.
Yeah, that's true.
so in that way I can be lazy, but I really love the extravagance of a good tiki cocktail. I have all the fixins and things to make it look really cool when I present a cocktail to a guest at home. So I do like to make things. A drink that I when I have it on hand and I make fresh gardenia mix, I have a Pearl Diver variation of mine that uses Clarin, which is a really controversial spirit, a little bit of agricole and gin. And so it's wild, but we were kind of going to push to have it on the menu at Sunken Harbor at one point. But it just kind of fell off the wagon in R&D stage. But I think it's ready. I like it the way that it is, but, you know, Garrett has his tweaks and his fixes, and we just kind of abandoned it for other things.
That sounds very ambitious, honestly, with those three flavors in there.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say three, a gardenia mix and then the spirits you've chosen are not what I would automatically put there. So that's a bit of that science. So let's talk about your road trip, because we brought it up a couple of times. Yeah. And it's something that you're still sort of doing because you've now tried all the drinks. So just tell me about your road trip. Why? Yeah. When?
Yeah. The why and the how are the big questions that people ask a lot. Like, what, you know, what made you want to do that? And I think I had already alluded to this, but, you know, learning tiki cocktails, I'm again from Southern California, I got into bartending and cocktails, like good cocktails, once I moved to New York, and therefore found tiki after I moved to New York. Well, tiki is, you know, New York's kind of a wasteland for tiki. So I moved from like the tiki capital of the world to a place that has hardly embraced it. And so I felt a little bit like a poser. I hadn't really gotten out there as a person who wanted to consider themselves an authority on tiki. And I'd certainly read all the books and done research. I hadn't been physically to many of these spaces. And so when my wife and I moved to New York 12 years ago, we road tripped. You know, the decision was to fly or to drive. And I grew up doing road trips to Michigan to see my mom's family. So I had that experience and she did not. She, as a kid, had only been as far west or east as Las Vegas and Grand Canyon on family trips.
Same.
Yeah.
That's so I was like,
yeah. It was like, we're driving to the East Coast. Like, we're going to go all the way across. There's so much to see. Let's take a month and zigzag. When are we going to get this chance again? So we camped, you know, got a national parks pass, you know, an annual pass that grants you entry into the parks. And we, you know, booked campsites and we stayed indoors a few times, but mostly we were just kind of living in the great outdoors and driving along and seeing all the sights. And by the time we landed in New York, it felt like weird that we were done, that we should keep going, you know? So we're like, well, this is home now. So unfortunately the trip is over, but you know what? That can't be the last time we ever do this. And so it's always that sense of wanderlust set in, this thought that we're going to do that again someday. And when we do, it's going to be bigger and better. Nice. And the thing that changed between that trip and this last one is that in the meantime, I fell in love with tiki. And so to sort of sweeten the deal, I said, well, let's add in a few more cities this time, you know, cause there are some great, like we had never been to New Orleans. She hadn't been to Chicago. We had never been up to Seattle. Like, you know, it's like, that's a lot of driving around and pretty far out of the way for some of these, but there are tiki bars in them. So let's add tiki bars to some of, to our trip. And along the way I was writing up, cause we really just wanted to share the experience that, you know, that just kind of in real time, what we were, what was happening for us on the road and how the fun we were having. I don't know. I guess maybe there was a little bit of like sort of rubbing it in your face, but also just wanted to share with people, because again, that first trip to New York, we did a blog and we, we archived the whole thing and it was just for friends and family to follow. But this time I was like, I always find when you do a blog and then you post online somewhere, a link to that blog, most of the time people don't click it. So I just started posting in the different Facebook groups and on Instagram. And I wasn't intending to review or critique these bars, but that's what the trip ended up becoming. The whole trip, the camping and everything that we had done years before was all sort of belying this mission to reach as many tiki bars as we could. That became the new goal. Like, well, there's two in this next city. Let's
see what we can do. Yeah.
Four hours away. If we leave now, we can get there and get them both in. And that's kind of what happened. And it became more about quantity than quality.
Yeah. Well, you learn a lot along the way.
Of course.
Even the not so great quality places might've had amazing people. And I think that's something I loved when I was reading, because I was one of the people reading these posts as you went on. And I'm sorry if I'm cutting out there.
Good. Thank you for following.
I was like, oh, what's happening? I was following all that stuff and I saw as they progressed, when it first started, it's like, oh, what's this guy all about? Who's this guy like writing his road trip on here? But as they progressed, I was like, oh, this guy's really doing it. These people are in there. They're doing the tiki road trip. They're driving around. They're trying the drinks. And it was one thing that I appreciate anyway, is that it was always good natured. you could, even if a place didn't seem like it was probably the best place in the world, you still found something to appreciate about it. And, you know, say, the drinks are this, but you know, the bartender was really nice or whatever it was. And that's super valid too. And I think that gave it a whole new vibe, because so many people in this day and age, especially, everybody's a critic, right? And in social media, it's so easy to jump on the hate. Everyone wants just to, they want to be the pro, putting negativity out there.
And I didn't want to tear any of these places down. I didn't want to tear them down, because to me, I kind of live by the advice that if you love tiki bars, you want more of them. And I'm certainly, I certainly subscribe to that philosophy. Like, even a bad tiki bar is a good thing. So, I mean, I'm like, some of these older ones, you know, they're kind of falling apart a little bit. They've let the drinks go. But you got to respect them for hanging on all these years. Mm-hmm. They've stuck around in spite of loss of all these products and have had to change their model and what they deliver in terms of an experience. And that's, unfortunately, if that's not up to your standards, that's the experience you can have there now. But I think for most of us, we recognize the honor and nobility of having hung on for 40, 50 years. Like, that's quite an accomplishment for any business.
And then you've got places like, say, Tonga Hut in North Hollywood, which, you know, opened as a premier tiki destination and then excellent became spot. A dive bar for decades. Oh, I mean, I went there. The first time I went there was for, it was punk rock birthdays. And actually I lived in the Bay Area for a long time. And I always joke around that Trader Vic's to me, I went there all the time. But as I just said, punk rock birthday, that's why I went there. I worked in radio and it was like right by Gilman Street. It was a bunch of old crusty punks. And that's where we would all go for somebody's birthday, was Trader Vic's, because it was like cheesy and fun. Yeah. You know, we always had a great time there, but it was always like, oh, good, good drink with an umbrella in it. I cannot tell you if I thought that the drinks were good at that time. You know, I just thought it was a cool space and it was fun. You know,
and even like a dive bar, it's not, I mean, dive bars exist, people go and they have a great time. Sometimes you're in the mood for a dive bar. If it just happens to be tiki, all the better, because it's got at least a little bit of a flair and something thematic about it. Whether that's done well is another question. But I think people, I just urge people to give tiki bars, even the divey ones, a chance to grow on you, because it's not always just about really great cocktails. It's really about the experience that you bring and just, again, adjust expectations.
Now, how many tiki bars have you hit so far? Because I know you're still going.
We're still going.
Quite over.
We took a hiatus because the initial goal, once I set up our itinerary for our trip last summer, we left from basically on the road the end of June to the very beginning of October. But for the first, and there were some weeks in between where we hit no tiki bars. We were just off the grid or celebrating our anniversary or whatever. And so the goal was 80 tiki bars in 11 weeks. It ended up being, at the end of that tour, 70 tiki bars in 12 weeks. And, you know, we learned about new ones that we didn't know of. But we also had to scrap some because there were closures, permanent closures or changes of hours in operation. They just weren't open as we were passing through. So that, you know, the itinerary fluctuated a little, but in the end it was 70 bars in 12 weeks.
Crazy.
And that's the first leg. That's the big one. Yeah.
That hurts my liver.
It hurts. It was exhausting. Yeah. It was exhaustive work, but you know, we took them for the team.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I look forward to reading about it again.
And then now we're up to our 89th stop. So we've added almost 20 more stops.
Wow. Wow.
And we recently went through Texas. That's where I got my COVID.
I got mine in New Orleans. Yay.
Yeah, the South.
South. There we go.
And we drove through, we saw the bum and that was great. And then we went through Alabama and got a couple more there. So that was another week, you know, like six more bars just in a week. Like, that's kind of what we've been doing, is just boom, boom, boom. I didn't do any in New York City initially, but for the project, I wanted to include, of course, whatever is available in New York, and including the Sunken Harbor Club.
So yeah, you got to.
We're going to have that on the list.
You can't leave that off. I know it may be a conflict of interest, but at least you can back it up.
I can back it up, and I have to. Yeah, I just, there's going to be some built-in pre-bias, but again, because I've seen everything, I think I can.
You can end with it, maybe.
I think I can quantitatively say that it is, you know, like I know if it's actually good or if, you know, it's not just our own, like, you know, us being full of ourselves. Like,
yeah.
I know from experience being out there on the road and seeing what's on offer that it is one of the better tiki bars in the country, right?
It really, I know, I honestly believe you. It's amazing drinks. The vibe was so great. And I'm going to see if I can say this without coughing. El Diablo.
Yes.
One of my favorite things. You guys are pulling the Disney element on there too.
Yes. Yes. El Diablo.
El Diablo. There it is. Now I got there. El Diablo. Just for anyone listening.
See, it makes me cough.
I know.
I'm too hard on myself at work sometimes post COVID. And I just start
coughing.
I get that scratch in the throat. Yeah.
Totally. Like you guys got to do the yell. It's like, you know, and
you got to have the traditions in the cars.
For anyone who hasn't been there, El Diablo is one of those old drinks. I mean, is that a pre-prohibition El Diablo? That's an old one, right?
I guess it comes originally from Mexico, but, and was originally made. Trader Vic popularized it. And
okay. So but it's an old drink for sure.
It's an old drink. It became a thing that he would do, at Trader Vic's and eventually at Senior Pecos, his other chain.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And there it is. So if you order the El Diablo, everyone knows that you've ordered the El Diablo.
Yes.
Cruising in that car. I mean, that's a lot of time in the car. Yeah. Don't tell me you were listening to podcasts the entire time. There were two of you in there.
Not the entire.
There had to be some good car driving music while you were in there.
Yeah. So I have
the road trip
I have a list. It's not as extensive as Garrett's. This is the thing he and I like kind of, he loves that I know a lot of these bands, the Exotica bands and old, you know, like Herb Alpert and thing, you know, just old like lounge music and anything that's, I think a good playlist in a tiki bar is not all like pure Exotica. You know, you're not just trying to keep the vibe going with Martin Denny and Les Baxter and Arthur Lyman and these guys. You want to vary it up a little bit. And we actually have two people who have a background in music and sound. Dan, one of our other bartenders, is an engineer. And so he understands, like, as the vibe changes in a bar, as more people come in and it gets a little rowdier, you need to play things that are maybe a little bit more upbeat. You do have to kind of play DJ. When we've been to Three Dots and a Dash, it's usually later and the music is catering more toward the youthful crowd that wants
to, like, hip hop.
You know, go to this live. Mm-hmm. It can be hip hop and house music and stuff like that. But some of the selections are relative. You know, it might sing about something tropical. It might not necessarily feel tropical, but it is singing about it. And same thing at Hugman's Oasis down in San Antonio. I really loved their playlist because it was very hip, but they also had plenty of lounge and, you know, sort of Exotica standards. And that's kind of what my playlist is. I mean, this is a playlist that I sort of curated. It's not like Garrett has over 100 hours of music. So you're never going to hear the same song in Sunken Harbor twice in one visit. And that's good for us too, because we don't get tired of like hearing the same songs over and over.
Yeah.
But my playlist is probably 10 to 12 hours, maybe a little longer. But I curated this for the house party initially, and I've just continued to add to it. So when we would be getting closer to tiki bars, that's when we'd like, okay, podcast off. We got to get into the mode get into the mode, you know, I'm going to throw on the hat and delay, you know, it's like, that's what I want to be hearing right now. So we can move very seamlessly into this tiki book.
So you never, not once did you listen to the Doors while you were pulling up into one of those? Cause you're kind of a classic rock guy too, it looks like.
Actually. Yeah. I am very much into classic rock. That was the style that the genre that kind of grabbed me the hardest and the longest. And, and I tend to, I have a background in set building. And so that's kind of the music that I would put on. I would blast like hard rock when I, you know, be building stuff, because it just kept me moving. But there was a time I think this was between Dallas to Tulsa, or either either that or Tulsa to our way site in Canada. But my wife just, she didn't really know. Her name is Trista, by the way.
Hey, Trista. I'll just throw her in there. She was your co-pilot after all.
Yeah, so. She co-pilot. Yeah, she did driving when I had a little too much to drink, which was great. But she also booked our hotel stays and reserved our campsite. And she played DJ and found the podcasts or playlists that we'd want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And one day she just decided to surprise me and threw on the Doors. And we listened to the Doors for like hours and hours straight. Because she hadn't really heard a lot of their songs, you know, just a few of their bigger hits, but she didn't really know them that well. And she knew that I would perk up to that. I think I was also getting tired. And yeah. I hadn't like either I needed more coffee or something had to change. And she's like, all right, we're going to put on some Doors for him.
Because, you know, that's like, there are tiki bars around here where I'm going and you'll hear like the punk rock, but there's some classic rock that'll work in that realm too. And it's so funny within those communities, the arguments that they can get into around that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I guess you have had your own tiki bar when you're at home, when you did your parties and you were at home. Now I know you had your Exotica list, but say you were not doing that. What would be your tiki music of choice that wasn't tiki music? What do you think would work in there? You know,
I mean, like during the party?
Yeah. If you were throwing a party, I mean, did you ever throw on stuff that was not necessarily something that wouldn't surprise you at a tiki bar? You know, you like your lounge.
No, I didn't do that during the parties because I had he's a very good friend of mine, but he wanted to like hijack the playlist and like, he's like, we need to change it up. We got to, you know, cause I just had it playing on random and it was just like one Exotica tune after the other. And it was getting later. And it's like we said, you know, people are feeling lively, but the vibe is dying a little bit. It's all like sort of soothing escapist music. So I granted him permission to, you know, all right, well, fine, change it up. But he just put on like Bob Marley, which is fine, you know, like, but it's not like one song, you know, maybe one song like to throw into the mix, but you can't have like a whole playlist of reggae because that's not tiki. I don't find that as offensive as other people do. And I don't find it as you know, at least reggae is tropical and
totally. I'm a huge fan of like throwing like rocksteady and ska and stuff into that.
Yeah, yeah. So you're going
to get that Caribbean kind of stuff. And I've talked to people about throwing like they throw like salsa in there and everything because even maybe it's not the typical tiki music, but it's still of the Caribbean, maybe.
Yeah, and, yeah. It's like tiki adjacent, as we like.
Yeah,
to say.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
It's like there's some association to it because it originates in tropical climes. So you're getting something that it can at least take you there, even if momentarily. But something like a Bob Marley also has it has the association to classic rock. I mean, you would hear that easily at a classic rock station. So I think that for a lot of hardcore tiki people is kind of a no-no, but I don't mind it.
Well, then there's also the yacht rock debate.
And then the yacht. Right.
Whereas some people are going to get really upset if Thunder Island comes on and other people think it's completely appropriate, you know?
It's totally fine. Yeah.
I fall into this totally fine camp as well.
I guess, you know, that's one thing I didn't comment a lot about on the tour was music, because it was either fine enough that I didn't notice it, or it was surprisingly great and I had to acknowledge it, or it was so bad. I would only acknowledge it if it was really great and kind of a standout in its sort of the breadth of stuff that they'd play, or it was just like, okay,
so bad.
This is so bad. It's all hip hop. It's all, you know, it's just like not even, you go through all that effort to, you know, take people away inside and put these tropical drinks in their hands. And then you play stuff like this that doesn't remind them at all of the tropics.
Of this.
So I understand why people are bothered by that.
It's a fine line. You know, you have to find the way that it works out because, you know, I think there's probably some hip hop that you can mix into a list. You know, you just have to be a little choosier about it. You just have to find the right sounding stuff, you know?
Absolutely. We've got a lot. Definitely a skill.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. And so,
it's a skill, yeah.
So, well, I think we've gotten a lot out of you. We got some music. We got some stuff. I know you still have a lot to do with your day.
Yes.
So if people want
to. Do you have a lot of guests? Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask if you get guests who are, I know predominantly they're, you know, record store people or DJs or musicians themselves.
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, really? Not right. Everybody well, is. Not
I mean, I'm definitely on that list.
You're on the music nerd list.
Of the non.
Yeah.
The music nerd list. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I like a lot of different kinds of music. Like,
well, you know, yeah. And you're,
as your a painter, I
was gonna say your playlist, right. You've got classical music on there, you know? So we have classical, we have metal, we have the exotica, all kinds of stuff, which I love. That's my favorite. You know, we could do all
crazy
of that
stuff.
Which I think it speaks volumes, and it means when you can construct your playlist, it's going to be an amazing playlist because you have a really broad a breadth of knowledge amongst genres, which not a lot of people have. A lot of people focus on one and then that's it. So you're more of a nerd than you may think. I'll give you that.
I've had a lot of influences. I have a lot of musician friends and DJ friends. And just as again, I've been an actor and an artist, and I I've never learned to play an instrument, you know. So
you're totally fine. And, well, let's get
well, from thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to get from you. I feel like our signal is getting a little wonky, so we should probably get this. Tell people where they can find you, both what bar and also, and actually, I don't think, I don't remember if you even said your name during the course of this. I think you did. but remind people.
My name is Adam Demrath.
There you go. Adam Demrath, as you fade away.
Yeah, our signal is.
The signal is getting weird. Tell me your Instagram.
And Sunken Harbor, at Adam Demrath. And I'm also on Facebook. I'm part of lots of tiki groups on there. So you can go through the old threads and find write-ups of the tour through there. And I will be putting the whole project into a book at some point. That's a long ways off because I still want to get down to Florida and hit the Maikai when that reopens and various other stops in the South that we missed. But so we'll eventually be 100 plus bars for the book project. So stay tuned for that. And I'll probably start advertising that when I'm anywhere near ready to.
To do that. Yeah. Excellent. Well, perfect. Thank you so much. Don't go away, but we're going to stop recording. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
So, since the end of our interview got marred by technical difficulties, you know, that's just life today in the Zoomy Zoom world. It's so great when we could do it in person, and we actually tried to do it in person, but couldn't make it work out. So, what you get is this, and let me tell you the Instagram handles, because it was kind of fritzing out there when he was saying those. Adam Demrath, Demerath, and at Sunken Harbor Club NYC. So look those up and follow them. And if you do the Facebook thing, cruise over to any tiki group pretty much. He's involved there and you can read his write-ups that he's been doing over the last year that one day will be a book. Maybe you just want to wait for the book. And also if you go to the Moherms Music and Booze, the Moherms page, they're on Facebook. I'll have a link to his playlist. It's a massive playlist. It's like 8 hours long. There's lots of classic rock. There's a chunk of classical music and also some swinging exotica type stuff. So it's a lot of fun. Go check that all out. And thank you so much, Adam. We'll have a drink together soon. I know it.
Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search Shebe Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.